Sports Radio 610 presents The Drive with Sterner and Hughley. Dive into the mind of former NFL quarterback Clint Sterner.
I like a good time. I like to have a party.
You know? I know you do.
It's Dirty's Daily.
All right, it's a reaction Monday. Texans get that dub 24-20 over the Jacksonville Jaguars, essentially knocking one of the division foes out of the mix, out of the equation moving forward in the division, I would think. Definitely making it much more difficult for Jacksonville to climb out of the hole, that the 0-4 hole that they dug. Wasn't a pretty win, but it was a dub, and they got it done. I think the one thing, Ron, that we can take away from this game is that defense was nails in the fourth quarter, and C.J. Stroud was special in the last drive. And when you got D'Amico Ryans and you got C.J. Stroud, damn it, you better be able to fall back on that when everything else looks rough and isn't ideal. You bet it's good to have those two guys to fall back on. C.J.'s proven to be that guy. He did it once again. And then you look up, and D'Amico Ryans with his pep talk right before the fourth quarter got his guys right, and they gave the offense opportunities to win this game, Ron. But I've got some complaints. I've got some complaints and some concerns, and it starts with one of my favorite guys to cover, one of my favorite guys to hear from. It starts with Bobby Slowick, the offensive coordinator for the Houston Texans. Right, we know that the Houston Texans are a team that believes in, you know, the thought that, hey man, it's week six or week eight before you really find out what your identity is, and before teams really start to separate in the NFL, and you know, it takes a while for you to learn all the new pieces and figure out what guys can do well and not do well. And I've seen enough of that. I've seen enough of the personnel decisions and the gimmicky plays, the gimmicky personnel packages. You're ultimately wasting downs with this football team. There's nothing that we've seen about the Houston Texans that tells me that putting Blake Fisher as a tight end in this offense and having a heavy package in this offense is a good idea between the 20s. If you want to do something tricky in third and one, and you want to do something tricky on fourth and one, and you want to do something tricky on the goal line, you know, a goal line to go situation, cool. I'm here for it. But between the 20s, we watched it early last year, and I think they eventually pretty much settled into, hey, CJ's going to be our guy. In order to win games, we're going to spin this thing around the park, and that's what they ended up doing. But we saw it again Sunday, Ron. This is my biggest complaint about Bobby Slowick. And I want to be clear. I'm not of the mindset that Bobby Slowick has been anything other than great for the Texans. He's tremendous. This thought that some people are unhappy with an offensive coordinator that just allowed a quarterback to have the best rookie season I've ever seen and win 10 games in the first year of being an offensive coordinator and going to the second round of the playoffs. Like, the thought of that guy's not absolute nails is silly to me. But he's not above you know, having a discussion about the guy. My biggest complaint are these wasted downs, Ron. And I'll give you an example. I said in the fourth quarter, the defense was good, and the defense was great and gave the offense multiple opportunities, right? Not the last drive, but the next to last drive. This is what we saw unfold. The Texans are down 20-17 in the fourth quarter. Offense has the ball, and Bobby Slowick throws a screen to, this is all in one drive, throws a screen to John Metchie.
That's right.
You got Diggs. You've got Nico. Hell, let's be honest. You've got backs that would be better to get the ball to. You've got a tight end screen. Dalton Schultz would be tremendous. Good teams with good tight ends have a great tight end screen game. Anything. John Metchie, in a sense of getting a screen, like, that's a play that, you know, when you call it, you know you're calling it for John Metchie. There is no way you get to a point where John Metchie is catching screens in a ball game where you're down three in the fourth quarter. In the same drive, Sims, who had already fumbled a punt, grabs an end around, and
you had taken him off the punt. You put Robert Woods back there.
Right. And he gets an end around in the same damn series. And this is the same series where CJ scrambles for a first down, and and Laramie gets a holding call, so it gets called back. You're behind the chain, all in the same series, right? And then I look up, and the skilled guys, four of the five skilled guys, because I couldn't find the fifth one, but I'm gonna guess it was a running back because I don't think they were ever empty. The skilled players on the field: John Mechie, Xavier Hutchinson, Cade Stover, and Dalton Schultz. And I couldn't find the running back at that point in time. But nonetheless, there's not a running back that was active in that game that was going to make that lineup any better. How, in a defining moment in a football game, is C.J. Stroud on the field without Nico and without Diggs both in the football game? It shocks me. Like I'm, and that's fine if you want to kind of, if this is part of the figuring out who's who and, you know, getting guys a breather or whatever you need to do in the fourth quarter. But 20-17, at this point, you didn't know you were going to get the ball back. You didn't know the defense was going to get you the football back. Ron, I just.
They are really into running the football with Woods and Hutchinson in the game.
Yeah.
They are really into that. Heavy, and then those two, almost as a tip-off, as a run. But they really have, the first several weeks, they've loved to do that.
Well, it's interesting, and I don't like it. As a former quarterback, I never liked it. I don't like real tight formations. Like, I don't like the stack formation on each, just outside the tackle, you know, the real tight stuff when they're running all the crossers and everything. I understand there's a method to the madness and why you're doing it. For me, it bunches everybody up. It clouds everybody up. I don't know who's in the box. I can't tell who's rushing, who's not. It's a difficult process for a quarterback. So, but it's one of those things where I understand. So I'm not going to complain about those kind of things. I understand that there's formationally and some of the different concepts they're running are like cutting edge, and you've got to do it out of tight formations. So there's a lot that I think I hear people complaining about, and I understand it. I get it. I love talking ball with those people. But it, to me, it's the low-hanging fruit. It's the blatantly obvious. Ron, there was a point. I look up, and again, it's the Fisher at tight end package, right? Blake Fisher at tight end, which for those out there listening that don't understand that, Blake Fisher is a tackle. He ain't catching a pass. You're bringing in a tackle and you're taking out one of your pass catchers.
He came in for Laramie Tunsil when he got injured.
Yes, he ended up coming in for Laramie Tunsil at the end of the first half when he got injured. Now, he came back in the second half, so Fisher went back to his tight end role, his tight end package. All right, so Fisher's in the game. And, Ron, I look up one time, and again, I'm going to miss one guy because I didn't have time to count the fifth one, but it's irrelevant. You got Fisher in at tight end. You got British Brooks in at fullback. You got Taylor in at tailback.
Oh, we forgot 260.
And you got Mechie in at wide receiver. Again, I didn't get the fourth guy, but those four guys. And this is all in a 20-17 ball game in the fourth quarter. I can't, like, I understand you're trying to figure out your identity and all that stuff, but this is, in these particular moments, I don't understand how it's even in the game plan. I don't understand the method. You know, I always told you, like,
especially not down in the fourth quarter.
Right. I don't need to agree with everything that's done. Never have been. I need to agree. But I like to just understand the method of the madness in football of what we're doing. I can't figure out what the hell, like why he would go to those things. Continually go to those things. Now, I hope, Ron, that it's something that as he figures out the identity of this team and it needs to lean a little bit more heavily on CJ and Nico and Diggs can't come off the field. And I know they're playing a huge chunk of snaps. I get it. But we heard D'Amico Ryan say that the DBs on this team don't rotate. They're going to play huge numbers of snaps. Well, damn it, Diggs and Nico need to as well. I mean, I can't – it blows my mind of how they decide who – hell, last week. Was it last week or the week before? Maybe it was a home game. Whenever it was. I mean – Xavier Hutchinson, it was the Minnesota game in the first half, I think it was. He's getting, because you said he got a touch before
he did.
Nico.
Yeah, he got a screen.
In my mind, and I get that you got to play depth and you got to give guys breaks and you want everybody to be able to do everything, but there's a time and a place for that. Down 14-0 against the Minnesota Vikings ain't one of them. Down 20-17 in your own backyard against a bad football team, the Jacksonville Jaguars, is not a time that I want to try to see if Mechie can break the ice here and become who we thought he was in the NFL. Man, I was about to pull my hair out on Sunday.
Yeah, it does sometimes seem like they're maybe overthinking like what they're about to put. Like, I'm gonna really get him here, and I'm guessing, Clint, as you know, that they have plays off of this that they haven't shown, right? I'm guessing they have plays off of the Blake Fisher.
Yeah.
I'm guessing. Because right now that I can remember, most times when Robert Woods and Hutch are in the game together, it's been run.
Yeah, but
and maybe there's something off of it.
I agree with you, Ron, and you and I've had that conversation before. I like the idea of setting something up, but not when you're down 20-17 in the fourth quarter. Let's do that a different time. Like I just think you're wait. There's a handful of wasted downs in the fourth quarter, particularly on that drive before, before the touchdown drive. Where I'm just like, man, you lose this game. We got to have some real conversations about what we're doing to try to score points, and anything that revolves around just lining up and with extra offensive linemen in the game, like we're going to be this ground and pound road grading football team or something with extra fullback and tight end and offensive that is not who this team is, man. I know you tried it last year and you realized eventually that was not who they were. That's not who this team is this year either. So I mean, Bobby Slowick got to quit with the silly stuff. That is a hard watch for me. There's some people that are mad because they run it on first down. There's some folks that are mad because he does X, Y, and Z. No, man, I just need the playmakers to be the dudes catching screens, right? I need Xavier Hutchins to be the blocker on that.
Got to be something they're working off of it.
Hopefully we don't lose a game to Jacksonville because we're working on something that they're. But I'm with you. Maybe there'll be a 4th-and-1 trick play coming up.
It's something they got Buffalo. They ready.
That's Ryan Ugley. I'm Clint Sterner. You listen to Sports Radio 610, Houston's sports leader. I don't know if y'all saw this, but Tom Brady's been doing a little TV, y'all, and I hadn't caught a ton of games because, as you know, with the Texans playing. And then
post game for me,
I don't get to see a lot, especially if I do, I go back and watch it on my NFL account. So I don't necessarily get to hear all of Tom Brady's, commentary, but I absolutely love every time I do. He's tremendous in the booth. I absolutely love it. And this week he called the Philadelphia Eagles at the Tampa Bay Buccaneers, and the Buccaneers win 33-16, and Baker Mayfield was absolutely on fire. 30 of 47, 347 yards, 2 touchdowns, and led his team to a big time victory over, I don't know what the hell's going on in Philly, but in the game, this was, I couldn't believe that they actually did it, but in the game, Ron, they throw up a graphic and have a conversation.
I bet Tom told him to do it.
I wonder if
that had to run through Tom.
I wonder if he knew it was coming. Yeah, oh, probably, right?
Yeah.
Right? So what happened was Baker Mayfield had joined a podcast earlier in the week leading up. I think it was earlier in the week. It was definitely before the game. And Mayfield had this to say. Obviously, playing-wise, Tom is different. He said he had everybody dialed in. High-strung environment, so I think everybody was pretty stressed out. They wanted me to come in to Tampa Bay, he's talking about, be myself, bring joy back to football for guys who weren't having as much fun. Now, I wanted to read that because it's misleading the way it's being kind of portrayed on social media, because he specifically said Tom. I think it's important that he specifically says Tom and is mentioning Tom. He's not just saying, hey, man, when I got to Tampa, people weren't having fun, so I did the X, Y, and Z. It's what they asked me to do. He says Tom is different. Tom had him dialed in. It was stressed out. So this was all about Tom. And then what they do in the game is they pull a graphic up of Baker Mayfield saying that. And they pretty much, I can't remember, who's his play-by-play?
Kevin Burke.
Burkhart? He tries to make a joke, Ron. He tries, ha, ha, yeah, you've made it miserable up here in the booth. And TB12 ain't hearing it, bro. TB12 is, listen to this. First of all, it's beautiful, but listen to the tone. This is Tom Brady's response to Baker Mayfield.
I thought stressful was not having Super Bowl rings. So there was a mindset of a champion that I took to work every day. This wasn't daycare. If I wanted to have fun, I was going to go to Disneyland with my kids.
This wasn't daycare. If I wanted to have fun, I would go to Disneyland with my kids. I mean, that's vintage Tom Brady. I wouldn't expect anything but that from Tom Brady. But it's refreshing, Ron, to get that dude. It's not some gimmicky character in the booth. It's legitimately the dude that he would have said that if somebody interviewed him and he was still playing.
Obviously, we were at the game, so we couldn't in any way watch that game.
Right.
You think, Tyler, you think he was taking out Baker Mayfield just slightly on the call? Like every time, just like small little nudges.
Like that was just in the back of his head, so he knew he wasn't going to just sing his praises like throughout
been,
the
like
game.
He's been, like, because we know Tom. Tom's like got that crazy Jordan, Kobe, Tiger thing where he just may have just held it the whole time. Like, you know, I wonder if he was sliding in short jokes and stuff. You know, like, oh boy, came up short. Mm. Only if he... You know, if Baker was a little taller, he could see through that rush and maybe could have made that throw. Wow, he was wide open.
He should have spent a quarter doing that just as a gimmick.
Just taking this small shot. Mm, wow.
Well, Baker, I don't think Baker gave him much choice. Baker
number one
Baker,
pick.
Baker played
round.
Lights out.
Wow.
Baker played lights out. And then there was some commentary. I believe it was on Van Pelt. I think it was on Scott's show. He had some really, really good commentary there about how he was playing as well, how quick he was getting the ball out, how well he was seeing things, obviously. And I'm telling you, man, I caught a little bit of one of the Cowboys games that he called. I think he had the Cowboys week one and week two or something like that, or two and three. I caught a couple of those and could hear some of it, but I haven't had a chance to really sit down and enjoy Brady in the booth, man. But that's big time.
Yeah, he's got some growth. Not surprising to do. I mean, just he's done four or five games. All right, coming up, we give you the latest coming from what we're hearing about Yordan Alvarez. We'll make sure you know about that. And we finally saw something. The Texans have avoided this. They've tried. They've avoided this for 3 weeks. We actually saw it yesterday, and it may be a blueprint for the Texans. We'll discuss that coming up next.
It's a Shoppers John Deere Reaction Monday on Sports Radio 610. Here's The Drive with Sterner and Hughley.
50-50, according to Brian McTaggart, who covers the Texans for MLB.com. He says it's a 50-50 decision whether Alvarez is on the playoff roster, which has to be in by 10 a.m. tomorrow.
No, God!
So I know Clint refuses to think of this. There has to be at least contingency plan conversations for this three-game series, potential three-game series, if the big fella isn't able to go. What's the move? If he isn't able to play, is it just, hey, you're rolling with Diaz and Vic in some form or fashion as the catcher in the DH? It's a tough one because you got one of the best lefties in the game on the mound, so you probably don't want Singleton to be in this game to start with the Scrubel out there. I wonder what that looks like if he's not in. I'm guessing this forces Dubon to have to be in this game. Are they going to have to? They have to have some lefty potentially maybe that they don't want to have into the lineup to face him in that game. Hopefully it doesn't happen, but I am curious to see what the lineup would look like. I'm guessing maybe what it has been, where he's been batting Tucker second, and what it looks like in terms of who fills the DH role, who fills the first base role, how they go about doing it. I'm sure they've discussed it, and I'm guessing it's game by game, whether there's a lefty or a righty on the mound, but they at least have to be having those conversations if what Brian McTaggart is reporting is true, that it's a 50-50 decision.
Yeah, so what were you thinking? Dubon in left field, Myers in center, obviously Tucker right.
Yeah, get you and then especially you want to get the righties.
Well, without Yordan, you've got to get Caratini in the game. So it's either catcher first,
and he's a switch hitter, so you can
both of those guys can hit righty. I guess the question is Hayward an option in left field, being a lefty, lefty on lefty? How do you feel about that? Cool.
There a right-handed bat we're missing? That's it. Maybe is DeZinzo, is he right-handed? No, he's lefty, isn't he? Yeah, he's a lefty. Good boy.
McCormick.
If Chaz is back, if he makes the roster, hell, I don't know if he's going to make the roster. Yeah, there's a... That's a scary proposition.
Shea. Don't forget about Shea now.
Triple A.
No, he got. He just got. He's well. He's not on. He's on the taxi squad, so he's up there. He can't play. But he's on taxi squad. He's helping the squad out. You know what I mean?
Yeah. Someone said we just gonna have to have in there. Hayward in there, I guess.
I'm not. Look, I'm not opposed to it. I'll be honest with you. I'm not a big believer in this lefty righty lefty thing. I get it.
Pitcher, you want to get as many righties in there.
Look, I mean, I get it. I get it. But, I mean, hell, it does matter. We just not just get as many righties as possible in there. I mean, it matters who that righty is, right?
Well, I mean, yeah, if we're saying, like, I think DeCenzo, is he a right or lefty? I think he's a righty. Yeah. If we're saying DeCenzo versus Tucker, yeah. Yeah, of course, you're going to go with Tucker. But, like, if we're saying DeCenzo versus John Singleton against this really, really tough lefty, I'd probably start that thing out with a right-handed hitter because I don't think either one of them is great, right? So I think they're probably the same level hitter, and I think it's a lot tougher when you have a power, very, very tough lefty. Like I wouldn't want John Singleton to face, you know, Framber Valdez. I wouldn't. No,
yeah, but I'm gonna be honest with you. In a playoff situation, I don't want DeCenzo facing nobody. Like, hell, we don't know who this kid is. I mean, boy, a lefty. Like, and I'm not looking at the advanced stats. So I mean, these guys, these lefties would have to be like god awful against left-handed pitchers for me to want to go with DeCenzo or somebody over just because they're right-handed.
Yeah, I mean,
like, if you had a right-hander that you at least knew what you were getting, and there were stats there that told you, like, hey, this guy obviously swings it better against lefties, cool. But I don't know that I've seen enough from DeCenzo to know what the hell who he is.
Yeah, I feel like I've probably seen enough from John to think, well, I don't know. I mean, you're putting him in a rough spot against this guy, so I don't know. Hopefully, it does not come to that, and hopefully, it is the 50-50 that is on the right side, and that Yordan is able to go enough.
And this is just a question. I'm not being so smart. Like, it was Hayward was a good enough player at one point to where they didn't matter, correct?
Oh, years ago.
Yeah. Right.
Yeah, I could, like, if you had the confidence to say, all right, man, he's been here before. I'd rather him in the lower half to get in at bat over a righty. That's fine. But just like what they have shown to be, like, they're a lot of them are platoon type guys.
Right. Well, I know there are advanced stats out there that make a strong case for one over the other, but I need that case to be made. Like, I need to see that. I need to see those numbers before I can just go out. Because I think we get a tad bit extreme when we're talking about guys that have never hadn't pissed a drop in Major League Baseball.
Yeah. Yeah. We'll see what they do. Hopefully, they don't have to do that. Because what you want to do is have Yordan in at DH and probably have Vic and Diaz in the game anyhow. And one of them playing first base and the other one catching. So you can load it up with as many guys on the right-handed side. And the guys who are left-handed are Tucker and Yordan. That's what you would want. All right, Clint, another big thing we saw in the game, and we'll see if this is a blueprint teams use. This was really the first game where we really got to see Jalen Petrie in coverage.
Mm-hmm.
This was the first one. Doug Peterson, hell, we know Doug Peterson damn near got Tavier Thomas. He's moved on. I mean, that was it for Tavier Thomas.
He definitely got Tavier Thomas moved on from
yeah. What did you think about Petrie? Because they certainly attempted to go that way a lot.
Yeah, look, I think they targeted him. I think that's one thing I liked. One reason I like Doug Peterson and have liked him in the past is because he's shown the ability to really zone in on a weakness and get the matchup that he wanted. And the truth of the matter is, I think Trevor missed a couple times. We're having a different conference. We're leading the show with something different today. If he doesn't miss a couple of times Christian Kirk or who was the other cat that was that he had him a couple of times, seven.
Brian Thomas.
Yeah. So I mean, there's, you know, the truth of the matter is he got targeted, and the truth of the matter is the quarterback missed a couple times. So I'm not overly concerned about it at this point in time. The touchdown that they threw on him, that there's DBs of all different degrees and calibers that get that little stutter flat route ran on them on Sundays. Even the greatest ones have gotten beat on that route. I'm not worried about that. But the stuff you talked earlier, the deeper stuff, that where you can tell he's being targeted, that continues to be on the radar. I'm not overly concerned, but it's definitely on the radar.
Yeah, and we'll see. I'm sure Buffalo obviously has that film, and they'll try to do that in teams down the line. But yeah, you know, Christian Kirk is one of the best slot receivers. And to be honest with you, you know, you were seeing it was either Murray or him in the slot covering those guys. And I mean, as we said, Trevor missed a lot, but when he did convert, a lot of it was in that matchup.
Well, when that pressure, whether they're bringing multiple hats or you're expecting Daniil Hunter and Will Anderson to get home, when they bring that pressure and it doesn't get home, everybody not named Stingley in that defense is going to be in trouble. I mean, we've talked about this before.
That was the most he's been challenged.
Yeah, Lassiter, you look at Petrie, you mentioned Murray, and I'm going to tell you, he had Kalen Bullock one time. He had him beat and he missed well.
That's the touchdown, the long play he missed.
Yeah, where Kalen Bullock was in chase mode. So, I mean, you look at that. If that rush don't get home, if you give them a picture that, hey, these are the guys that are going to be covering your receivers, and you bring pressure – we're going to cover them for a second and a half, 2 seconds. You better get home. I mean, if those guys don't get home, they're going to be in trouble. We'll see how those guys develop as the season goes on. But the secondary for the Houston Texans is, with the exception of 24, who seems to be disinterested at times or lackadaisical at times, with the exception of him, man, there's some question marks out there.
No, there are. Best bets coming up to close out the show a little bit. Remember, D'Amico Ryan's The Coach's Show coming up at 5 o'clock. After us, and we'll hear from you a little bit. And I was dead wrong about Laramie Tunsil. We'll discuss that coming up next.
It's a Shoppers John Deere Reaction Monday on Sports Radio 610, live from the Twin Peaks Studios. Here's The Drive with Sterner and Hughley.
Best bets coming up here at the end, so stay tuned to figure out how you could potentially make some money. With our bets of the night, we'll hear from some of you, Larry in Stafford. I know you're on the line, Larry. Overall, man, how you feeling? 3-1. I know you was out there yesterday. How you feeling after yesterday's game and the start for the Texans?
Hey, man. It's tough, man, because we expected like this offense to be putting up 30, 40 points a game, and that Bobby Slowick, man. I know everybody is saying that don't give Bobby too much grief or whatever, but we are repeating the same stuff that we say every week. This dude is putting Xavier Hutchinson, Brittany Brooks, the left tackle and Schultz. I mean, like, he has them boys. Nico and Dig sitting over there by him, that logically makes no sense under any circumstances, and especially when your ass is losing a game to a division rival like the Jags in the fourth quarter. So, for me, what it made me feel like was getting my ass up out my seat and hitting that escalator and getting my ass up out of there, because it seems like to me you trying to throw the game or concede the game or something. Bobby Slowick has too much talent to be over there thinking that he got to figure out a way to get everybody involved. I don't need to see everybody ass involved. What I need to see is Nico and Stephon Diggs and C.J. Stroud not being down in the fourth quarter to a sorry-ass Duval team, man. And look, D'Amico has to figure out real quick, and we've talked about this multiple times. If your ass is going to continue to put safeties on these kind of wide receivers, you might as well expect their ass to get. I don't know if they've mended their relationship with Steven Nelson or if they can go out and get Xavier Howard or somebody, but if you need a slot corner, your ass better go get one. Overall, man, sitting at 3-1, I'll take it. But, sure, I got one other thing to talk to you about. My boy told me, man, you was out there in them Jesus sandals on Friday, man, with your little orange hair, man. Look here, dog. I'm going to pray for them feet, man, if you're in them Jesus sandals, man, because between them sidewinders and them sandals, so you two, you know, you can't be doing that, man, and I'll holler.
Birkenstocks, very solid, solid, good shoes.
Sidewinder ass tennis shoes.
Feel very comfortable with. Good price, good comfort. Love them. Shout out to wherever I got them.
Who went in there and told on you, man? That's the question. Who told Larry you had the Jesus?
Our guy who always buys us drink, even we tell him that we good. He told me. I had him. Listen, man. They gotta figure some things out. I mean, you know, clearly, Clint, when you have these weapons, this five-headed monster, you know, you gotta try to figure out things. And I think he was also trying to figure out, all right, I'm down Tank, I'm down, you know, Mixon. I've gotta, like, what other ways can I do stuff where everything's not dependent on Nico Collins? And Stephon is a little bit, but some of it's like, what's it just not dependent on Nico? Because I bet he looks over there, and I bet you CJ, especially you think about it from last year. Hey, man, one person got 15 targets.
Yeah. Yeah, but Ron, not in the fourth quarter, man.
No, I hear
not
you.
Not in the last 8 minutes of the game when you're down three. First of all, but like the other part of it for me is like Nico is giving them the business. And if you want to, even if you want to run some kind of misdirection, if you want to run the football, line Nico up wide and watch him dedicate a safety and a corner to him. Watch him expand a linebacker out there. Watch the attention that he gets, and then try to run the football. Everyone, like, I just, for the life of me, I cannot. When you take Diggs and Nico off of the field, you literally, whatever fear this offense can pose to a defensive coordinator, when you take those two guys off the field, that old sphincter loosens up a bit. That they take a deep breath. They're like, "Ooh, okay, let's gather our thoughts." I mean, it just,
or they're trying to trick us, or
yeah, whatever it may be. But you're lose so much explosive, like, playmaking ability that literally in those moments, the best, most proven, most explosive player on the field is Dalton Schultz. Like it just, and again, the timing is critical for me. I don't give a damn what you do, really. I mean, I do, but I can overlook some of the first half stuff, some of the first quarter stuff. If you're up comfortably in the second half, if you're like controlling a game, I can understand. But you're like, the two things are, the timing was piss poor, and I think the effort to try to run the football with those kinds of approaches is beating your head against the wall. If anything, spread them out and try to create some space for your offensive line to work instead of bunch them up and let guys just create more traffic. That baffles me. Now, with all that said, I mean, again, you got a guy that has done something in the first four games that no Texans quarterback had ever done. He's thrown for more yards than any other quarterback in the first four games. I believe that's right, isn't it?
I'm not sure.
And it's hard to think that coordinator ain't worth a damn.
No, he's.
Is it Nico? Is it Nico or is it CJ that did that? It's Nico. It's Nico. Nico, because he has more in a month of football. He's had more yards ever than any other wide receiver. It's Nico, because I remember him talking about. Obviously, you've
489
got
489 right now.
Yeah, no receiver, including Andre Johnson or DeAndre Hopkins, that did that in first four games.
Yeah, it's coming. They're getting him involved. It just, they just seem to be struggling, not having all their parts. And you know, hopefully they'll get to it. They'll get there. And it's just, you look at what the Bills did to this defense the week before, and the number that the Bills did to the tune of 47 points on the Jags defense. And at times,
yeah,
the Jags, through the second half, that third quarter, the Jags was just shutting the Texans offense down repeatedly, like three, almost maybe a four and out and two, three and outs in that third quarter. And I think that's kind of probably where Larry is going. Coming up behind us, it's the coaches show with D'Amico Ryan. So stay tuned for that. Texans All Access from 6 to 7, and then Monday Night Football coverage following Texans All Access with John Vander Vandermeer and or with Mark Vandermeer and John Harris. So stay tuned for that. Sorry about that, fellas. All right, let's hit our best bets here. Best bets of the night. So you want to make a little money? Here's your chance to make a little cash. Tyler, what's you know what? Now let's save Tyler for last. Tyler probably got 16,000 bets to go through right now. Clint, what's your best bet for the people to make some money? And do you got money on this yourself?
Yeah, $100. Put $100 on it. Monday night, best bet, baby. Amon-Ra St. Brown, over 6.5 catches. Ron, when you look at targets right now. Per game, I guess. I think he's up in that 12 range. He's not on my list here of top targets because I think they've already tabbed in all of this week's numbers. But Amon-Ra St. Brown right now is 11th, 32 targets in 3 games. He's up over 10 targets a game, almost 11 targets a game. I believe tonight's going to be a big night for him. Get Seahawks at home.
You killed it on neighbors. The last time you did this.
Yeah, that's one time some depth reasoning actually worked out for me. But this is Amon-Ra St. Brown. I like his style. Multiple ways he can impact the game in terms of screen game, down the field, shot plays, mid-range game, quick game. I got a feeling he's gonna have a big night. So I don't give a damn how many yards he gets. Just get these catches up there. I need 7 catches out of Amon-Ra St. Brown.
That's Jared Goff. That's his man. But McDonald's a great defensive coach for Seattle. So we'll see what happens there. Mine is the Titans and the Dolphins tonight. The total is 37.5. Man, Tyler, I'm taking the under on that. Skylar Thompson lost his job. Now Tyler Huntley is in this thing.
Been there about 8 days.
We'll see what he can do. I know, obviously, they got Hill and Waddle, but, I mean, that has not meant anything since Tua has been out. And then Will Levis and the Titans, their offenses, they've been struggling. Even though they have weapons on the outside, they have been fighting it and struggling. So I think I take the under on the total at 37.5. What's your best bet, Tyler?
I'll give you just one. You were right, though. I have a full slate of bets. I co-signed big time what Clint's on, the 6.5 receptions for St. Brown. I'm actually right on that one as well. But my best bet for tonight, Tyler Lockett, Seattle Seahawks, over 43.5 receiving yards. They'll be looking at him early and often. He'll rack up the receptions, and he'll get over that yards markage. So, Tyler Lockett.
I did some radio with his dad, Kevin Lockett.
Oh, yeah?
Good for you.
Lockett boys, huh?
Lockett guys, yeah. They have some time in the league. All right, we appreciate D'Amico Ryans for joining the show, kind of, in his press conference. Clint, great job. Tyler, great job as always. D'Amico Ryans, coach's show coming up right behind us. Texans All Access after that. And then some great Monday Night Football coverage. So stay tuned right here on Sports Radio 610. I am Ron Hughley. As always, Houston, we love you, baby.
Thank you guys for bringing us a first-class sports show to the city.
You're going to get hard.
Man.